The Monday Morning Tech Chat Show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. All right, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat on the SGGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, some gadget guy, the SGG of this horribly, horribly named podcast series. And the QA, of course, stands for question and answer. We like to make this an interactive conversation, kick off our week, get our tech week started right. And I'm already seeing an incredible, just an awesome collection of people in the live chat right now. We got LFA Reviews, we've got Pata, we've got Natakun, we've got Pascal, we've got Root Knight, Matt Tyler, Aditya Anil, Q3 Becker, Gary the Fireman, Matt Tyler, Arthur Lee, Dave Burns. I'm missing some folks in here because the stream is just going faster and the chat's going faster than I can keep up with. I heard some notes that the audio was crackly, so just keep me posted on whether or not this gets weird during the podcast. I might be recording just a little hot, so let me dial down my levels just a touch. But yes, I like to hold my tech chat show on a Monday. We like to follow up on tech news stories as they break, and then as we get a little further away from, you know, just the top headlines, we want to follow up and make sure that we're staying on the pulse. And then also, there might be some breaking news over the weekend, or just a little time for us to sort out our feelings on the tech stories that we want to follow. So I thank you again, as always, for joining me on a Monday morning. With everything that's going on in the world today, I'm very appreciative of you being able to carve out some time, spend that time with me, and that we can geek out and we can nerd out together for a couple hours. I kind of need to try and keep this one to around 2 hours. I know I tend to run over, you know, it's not uncommon for this 2-hour podcast to almost become a 3-hour podcast, but we've just got some family scheduling that I need to jump off, relatively efficiently for what I normally produce on this show. So in lieu of doing my normal, well, over the weekend, I ate some delicious mac and cheese, you know, family recapping, I'm going to jump straight into some housekeeping, because like last week, we've got a lot of housekeeping to cover. And I'm going to try and keep housekeeping a little bit more efficient. I'm seeing JMX Warrior saying 17 minutes, Matt Tyler saying 13. I'm going to see what we can pull off here. Dev Burns, just stop making videos. Gary the Fireman. I don't know that's the actual Gary the Fireman saying housekeeping plus or minus 15 minutes. So what does that mean? That this could be up to 30 minutes of housekeeping? Let's jump in. I had the backlog of videos. We moved to Gadget Lab 3.0. I'm still trying to work out my workflow in light of the situation that the world finds itself in today. I'm starting to chew through some of those backlogged videos, and so stuff is getting up on the channel a bit more efficiently. I still have a ways to go, but we'll see. So 9:04, I want to be done with housekeeping by 9:15. Kicking on to some screen share. Number one, I finally got this video out. #2020 hearing modern life is really loud. This was another important video for me. This was the big campaign for 2020. And unfortunately, because of work-life world changes, hashtag 2020 hearing hasn't been the project. I haven't been able to accomplish what I've been wanting to accomplish. But this video was really important to me, just as, again, as another conversation piece, good information that you can share with your family and friends, and kind of pointing out modern life is really loud, not just from traffic sounds and from work sounds and what OSHA says is safe for an 8-hour workday. I'd like you to think, you know, how loud is your coffee grinder and how close are you to that coffee grinder when you use it? You go to when we can all go back outside again and you use a public restroom, how loud are the hand dryers and are your kids' ears closer to those hand dryers than your ears? Things like that we don't really take into consideration. And yet, we've got problems with, you know, advanced hearing loss, even in younger people, you know, people my age. So again, another talking point video, something that we can help share some good information on. And then I'll be coming back. I have another hashtag 2020 hearing video in production, not for this next weekend, but for the weekend following. I also kicked off a whole new series. Let me get this out of the way here. I kicked off a whole new series on the OnePlus 8. So this is something I'm going to be trying to do for every phone that I come in to review. I sound like a cyborg. This is all. Yeah, it might be the RTX voice. Hold on one second. I'm going to try something in real time and it might destroy the stream. I have no idea. 2 seconds. Do, 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 do. Ba, ba, ba. All right. Let's see if this changes anything for how I sound. I mean, I can't hear what I'm saying. So, I mean, I can't hear the stream of what I'm saying. Also, I'm going to adjust my camera. It's a little high. We're doing it live, people. We're doing it live. Yeah, there we go. I like that better. Or just refocus just to make sure. Perfect. All right. Let's get this back. All right. Next up. That doesn't count against my housekeeping. So now we're going to 916. OnePlus 8 and OnePlus 8 Pro by the benchmarks. So I have been collecting performance data on every phone I review for the last 5 years now, trying to measure things like video rendering, image stabilization, battery life and benchmarking performance. I mean, beyond just, I ran Geekbench and that score is bigger than another score. I'm trying to find real world applications, like real things that we can track and measure and see if, you know, when we're promised these amazing improvements, if manufacturers are actually living up to that. And now, instead of doing the same kind of gimmicky first impressions, 24 hours with the OnePlus 8, I still don't know anything about the phone, but it feels really nice in the hand. Instead of doing videos like that, I can start sharing some of my early performance testing while I'm going through the review process and actually using the phone. So that's going to be the gig moving forward. And I'm going to call that series By the Benchmarks. Then I also put out a more contemplative piece on the iPhone SE 2020, just taking a look back at the original iPhone SE, what made that such an interesting phone and such a disruptive product for Apple's lineup, and how we see some of the same market conditions today, that there are a lot of forces at play to encourage Apple to take lesser expensive phones more seriously. And so that to me is one of the most exciting aspects of the iPhone SE. It really doesn't have a lot to do with the phone itself, like the actual hardware. I mean, we all know what that hardware is. It's this like manufacturer philosophy. So let me scroll that out of the way there. So yeah, it's iPhone SE to SE 2020 passing the torch. And it's a chiller, kind of cooler video for me. I don't usually do a lot of the, let me do a cute panning tracking shot so that you have visual interest. I tried to spruce this one up a bit. We'll see how successful that one is. Continuing on with me producing way more content than anyone could actually consume, I had a great sit down with Nick Gray from Fandroid, reviving my creator chat series. It's on the same podcast channel. If you're subscribed to this podcast, then you'll also be getting these in your podcast feed. And we talked for like a good 90 minutes, sorting out some of his experiences and trying to revive a site. So Fandroid was quite possibly the first true Android news website. The Fandroid name was the Fandroid URL was claimed hours after the public announcement of Google getting into the operating system business. So it was kind of a big deal site. They had some decent traction on a YouTube channel, and then about 3 years ago, they just went silent. The people who were running the site before just decided that it wasn't for them, and Nick saw an opportunity, and he's now trying to rebuild a community there. And Nick does phenomenal work. I really enjoy his commentary on things. So he was very open. I mean, especially about the challenges. It's tough to have a conversation like that and actually share some of the more difficult aspects behind the scenes, you know? So, I mean, he put out like, not the doom and gloom, but like how difficult it's been. And it's a pretty fair look at the market we find ourselves in today. It might be easier to build something new than to try and revive something that Google's algorithm has declared dead. So yes, phenomenal conversation. I'm going to be having more creator chats coming up, but you know, if that kind of behind the scenes look, or you know, the inspiration or how someone got involved in tech commentary, if that interests you in the slightest, the entire backlog of creator chats has been a lot of fun to produce. And then I need to be covering more AudioKit. I blame LFA Reviews for hyping me up on these. I finally got my hands on some. I'm taking a listen to the Soundcore Liberty 2 Pro True Wireless Earbuds. And around that $150 premium tier, you know, where we're just kind of nipping around at the heels of the regular AirPods, these are punchy sound performers. I think some of the techie bits could be a bit more polished and refined, but we're talking dual driver design with a very unique combination of a Knowles balanced arm and a dynamic driver nested together. And I don't know that I've heard bass this punchy or aggressive. LFA Reviews just kind of blinking in the live chat there. This is your fault, man. I saw your review on these and I finally got around to covering them myself. I cover a lot of audio gear. I cover a lot of headphones, but if you want to keep up with the real deal in headphone reviews, y'all should be subscribed to LFA Reviews. He inspired me to come back and give True Wireless another shot. So his is the wallet that says bad mother flipper on it. Moving right along, we do have also a couple Newegg products. Here, let me, not Newegg products, Newegg videos to put out that I'm really proud of. It apparently just failed on me now during this live stream. I'm going to keep it in reserve in case the leaf blowers kick on outside my window. We might try RTX voice again while streaming this live. I was really happy I was able to switch back to my main mic feed, but we did a closer look at the setup process and another sort of longer sound test for Newegg, and that video is out now, The Power of RTX Voice and How to Set It Up, RTX Voice Noise Cancellation, How to Set Up and Test. And the entire time I was recording on my absolute most detailed microphone. So this is my AKG C414. It's the XLS. It's the reference grade microphone. It's the late 90s gen of this mic. So it's better than, in my opinion, that's a little bit better than some of the newer versions of the 414. That this is like the mic I would pick first to capture the detail and nuance of a grand piano. And I had my my one more Bluetooth speakers, because you can stereo pair them, on both sides of me, just sort of farting out crowd sounds. So I had a really bad sound effects track of a mall food court, and I just had that blasting the entire time I'm recording on this super awesome, beautiful, detailed reference grade microphone. And then the Newegg Ninjas are kind of cutting back and forth between my track with RTX on and my track with RTX voice off. And it is pretty remarkable when it works. It turned me into Darth Vader here just a minute ago. But like, I can't hear it. So I still sound amazing to my own ears. And we also had one other video. This one's not doing as well. For all of the work that we've been putting in recently to try and help, like with home work at home and schooling at home and home production, these videos, I mean, a lot of effort goes into these tutorials. It's just, I need to talk to the Newegg Ninjas. You know, some of the titles that we put on our videos, not very attention grabbing. So when we see, you know, home production tips and tricks, you know, home studio work, video photography and audio production, I'm not sure that's really going to get anyone's attention. But what we have here is a pretty solid video. It's around 6 minutes long. If you're a creative, you know, if you're a cinematographer, an audio recorder, you know, you usually work as part of a team. And in this current climate that we find ourselves in, you might be tackling more work on your own. So we're trying to expand the conversation on, you're like, well, consider this. If you aren't used to shooting at home and you usually shoot at a studio, here are some tips and tricks on carving out a space and dealing with your lighting and some of the extra equipment you might be taking for granted. And again, we're trying to keep this conversation longer term, because I think a lot of changes that we're facing today, even when we start opening businesses back up, we're still going to be mixing a lot of working from home into the equation. So that's our contribution. You know, like I really want these to be ongoing, because I think a lot of people are kind of understanding the longer term challenges of moving out of an office, moving out of a studio, and still trying to accomplish high quality work. So, yeah, Def Burns too. I mean, exactly. Home production tips and tricks, I think, is already a better title. Our thumbnail is better, but the actual title of the video is less good. So again, I'm going to be talking to them. I mean, I shoot this stuff and I help them produce it and edit it, but there are like three different teams, and some of this goes through the Newegg social team. So I'll need to ask, like, hey, what happened? But that's going to do it for housekeeping, coming in at 9:17. So even with my RTX voice failure right here, I think we did pretty good. I'm going to take a sip of water here. For all of the stories that I just talked about, you know, my last week of production and all of the news articles we're going to be talking about this week, you will find them in the show notes on somegadgetguide.com, the show notes for this podcast, or just all the links collected for somegadgetguide.com. You'll be able to keep up with everything that we've been working on. Let me get this out of the way here. Def Burns, that's 1 minute over. I mean, 17 minutes of housekeeping. You know, technically, I started at 9:04, so we were at 13 minutes of housekeeping with about a minute for me to troubleshoot in real time the camera angle and RTX voice turning me into a cyborg. Although I really should do. I mean, let me put this out into the live chat. If I were to add a voice processing effect like a ring modulation or a vocoder, what science fiction, you know, robot should I do for an entire show? We talking like the Cylons from classic 1980s Battlestar Galactica? Are we talking Daleks? Like, I don't think I could scream like a Dalek for 2 hours straight, but the actual voice processing, I personally like the really smooth ring modulation of the Cybermen. Yeah, delete, delete, delete. And I could work the mic really close because they don't scream like a Dalek. That's a smoother tone. We could try and do the echo effects of the Borg. What would be your preferred science fiction robot for me to do an entire podcast like? So drop some ideas here. Optimus Prime, R2-D2. Beep, boop, beep, 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 boop, beep, boop. Lewis 74, Bender Bending Rodriguez. I've worked with, what's his name? The voice actor who does Bender. He also did Phoenix in Gears of War. That's so bad. I can't remember his name now. That's awful. He's a hilarious dude, but when he does that Bender voice, that is a high energy vocal performance. I like Charlie Spirit's song. If I could do an entire podcast like Hell 2000, heuristic algorithms, but really, it's just IBM. That would be really easy on my voice. John DiMaggio. Oh my God. All right, off stream, I'll punch myself in the gonads as recompense for forgetting John DiMaggio's name here. All right, we should jump into some news stories. We've got a couple news clips to Root Night, how about Siri? I need to play around with Siri voices because aren't yeah, anyway. I'm getting sidetracked. We've got news to cover. We've got follow-up stories to cover. And so these should be some shorter news articles. We don't have to spend a ton of time. Let me get this out of the way here. There is FCC news to talk about. We need to be aware of what these government agencies and regulatory agencies are doing with the different administrations that empower them. This one was yet another, it shouldn't be shocking. But it is continuously disappointing that we're having to play games like this. Coming by way of Del Cameron at Gizmodo, judge orders FCC to hand over IP addresses linked to fake net neutrality comments. And from the article, a Manhattan federal judge has ruled the Federal Communications Commission must provide two reporters access to server logs that may provide new insight into the allegations of fraud stemming from the agency's 2017 net neutrality rollback. A pair of New York Times reporters sued the FCC under the Freedom of Information Act after it refused their request to view copies of the logs. The logs will show, among other details, the originating IP addresses behind the millions of public comments sent to the agency ahead of the December 2017 net neutrality vote. We should not have to engage in this type of legal wrangling for a regulatory agency. The comments were public record. If you posted a comment, it's a part of the public record. You are identified as a public entity on that record. So why is the FCC, the actual regulatory commission that is supposed to protect consumer and citizen interests as it pertains to communications equipment and telecommunications infrastructure, why are they obfuscating and hiding obvious fraud? We are completely backwards on what this agency's mission and mandate are supposed to be. That is the exact opposite of what they should be trying to entangle, and we should not have to force judges to hear cases on Freedom of Information Acts to have access to this information. I cannot point to a more clear and glaring agenda-driven political machination than the FCC hiding the origination of fake net neutral fake anti-net neutrality comments. If we needed more evidence of regulatory capture and that this agency is now working in the best interests of mega corporations and not the citizens of this country, I think like that's a pretty clear example of what goes wrong when we let when we let former lawyers of ISPs run this type of agency. Dave Burns, what do you mean the IP addresses all came from a comp? Sorry, I'm gonna read this as if I'm acting out. So Dave Burns, this is his comment. What do you mean that the IP addresses all came from a Comcast office? Root Night 5, if the logs are public records, you shouldn't even have to ask for them. They should be straight up available for the public to view. I completely agree. Yeah, it's utterly disgusting. This is a one positive step that a judge saw this case and doesn't see any issue with this information being handed over to reporters. That was actually a little unnerving when I heard this was going before a judge. But two, it's just utterly ridiculous that we should have to take it to this point. There's a video of me in an early interview on Cheddar, that weird like stocks and investing business news for millennials streaming news site. When Ajit Pai was first installed as the head of the FCC, and I'm like, well, we don't have a lot of data. We don't know what he's going to do. We're yet to see if net neutrality will be protected. I mean, just to think a couple years back to now, like what a train wreck this has become. And again, completely landing against the general interests and the stated interests of the citizens of this country. And he's a disgrace to coffee drinkers, from Gary the Fireman. All right. This is another infuriating story. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this. Just the headline alone should be enough to get a little blood pressure up, a little ire up. Let me drop that in the live chat. And y'all remember when, you know, basically everyone in this country had their data compromised by a credit protection company. And we saw, like, you know, big legal fines, and this was going to change the way that the banking industry does business. Yeah, none of that happened. None of that came to pass. This is from Jacob Klein over at interest.com. Over 275 days since Equifax's data breach settlement, and no one has been paid. Have you felt someone owes you money? Last year, credit reporting agency Equifax was rocked by a massive data breach affecting most, 56% of Americans. The company agreed to one of the largest settlements of its kind, $700 million to be disbursed, covering identity protection monitoring services and direct cash payments to help those whose data had been stolen. Many of you probably read some of these headlines in the summer of 2019, and many more still filled out forms after promises of up to $125 per afflicted party. There were several deadlines and additional hoops people had to jump through, but 275 days later, no one has been paid yet. And it's not clear if they ever will be. It's been almost three times that time, 800 days since the breach itself actually occurred in quarter three, 2017. Yeah, that's not real money. So Equifax blows up the credit monitoring and identity protection system. The checks and protections that we sort of rely on just to do commerce in modern society. And the big payout, $700 million. Woo! That's some wrist slapping money right there. Make sure no other business, you know, falls into the same type of data breach or lax security policy that Equifax jumped into. But again, no one's been paid. That money that bounced around lawyers, that bounced around legal teams. It's got to be sort of recouping the investment and bringing these charges and fighting these fights. And $125. Now, I've suffered some identity theft. My time and effort in the years I've spent managing my own personal finances and working with a CPA to file my taxes, for example, from one minor, and it wasn't even like a really bad identity theft situation. It was something pretty minor. If I paid myself minimum wage, $125 wouldn't cover my time in handling my own personal risk for identity theft. You know, over the years of untangling that problem, completely insufficient. And we've dealt with this numerous times on this podcast. Company does something terrible. We get a headline like, oh man, $1 trillion company has to pay $500 million to regulators. There's no justice there. The people actually affected, they're not going to see any reparations for how they were affected. The lawyer's time is really what's going to be compensated for fighting this all out in court. And then the company has just been shown that basically as long as they pay a couple $100 million as a tax to regulators every now and then, they can kind of do whatever they want. They can kind of keep participating in bad faith in any way that they feel they can make a larger profit. You know, from Apple throttling battery performance to Equifax blowing up the credit check industry, cell phone carriers tracking and profiting off of your location data, you know, selling all of your personal data to outside influences, you know, even to the point where we can track Trump's security detail. You know, if you want to just follow, you know, President Trump's Secret Service members, that is information that is not difficult to get out of a cell phone carrier today. And you'd think that that would be harder. So it's a bummer. Gary the Fireman. No, I'm the real Juan Carlos Bagnell. Dave Burns with a very aggressive recommendation for how we can fix this problem. But I mean, I think we need a larger sliding scale on how these penalties affect corporations who fall afoul of our regulatory agencies. But again, our regulatory agencies are largely captured by the very industries that they're supposed to be regulating. Let me get this out of the way here. So I'm going to flip the order of two of these stories here. Today is Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. Tomorrow will be Revenge of the Sith. Not Cinco de Mayo. It'll be another Star Wars Day. I feel like when these types of things become when they hit a tipping point and companies that had nothing to do with the invention of these fun games that fans create, when it becomes a part of the commercialization of the major company that owns this stuff, these things become a lot less fun to participate with. You know, like I didn't kick off my podcast, "Oh, may the 4th be with you and also with you." And yeah, first of all, I'm a very passive Star Wars fan. You know, I like Star Wars, but I am not a huge diehard Star Wars fan. I like the movies, and Clone Wars is awesome. I like the original trilogy, I should say, and Clone Wars is awesome. So this little back and forth, this tweeting, I'd really like an actual lawyer to jump in on. After I'm done with this podcast, I think I'm going to reach out to Legal Eagle. If you have not seen the Legal Eagle YouTube channel, it is fantastic. He goes through, well, first of all, he'll break down actual legal issues. You know, like when the Mueller report came out, he had a really incisive, he's an actual trial attorney. He's very handsome. He's an actual trial attorney, and he broke down like some of the legal implications of that report. But then the really fun videos are when he goes through and analyzes the courtroom scenes in movies and TV shows. He's like, "Well, no, that would get you disbarred." And he actually like rates the veracity. So I would love his opinion on this situation right here, because Disney Plus, the Twitter PR running the Disney Plus Twitter account stepped in it pretty bad. This is not a good look. So let me Jeff Burns. Yes, I love Legal Eagle. Legal Eagle is so good. Highly recommend as a YouTube channel to watch.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So this is what Disney Plus did. This is April 27th. A quote from, this is their first tweet of three. Celebrate the saga. Reply with your favorite Star Wars memory, and you may see it somewhere special on hashtag May the 4th. Then they replied to their own tweet. And I really need to point this out. This wasn't a part of the original tweet asking for people to share their Star Wars memories. This is a reply to their own tweet. So remember, that doesn't show up in a Twitter timeline exactly the same way as a new tweet. You have to kind of look for tweets and replies and be following Disney Plus. And if someone shares one tweet and not the other, it doesn't stack up right. Especially if you let your Twitter account go through most popular tweets as opposed to latest tweets. Again, lots of manipulation here and nooks and crannies. But let's get back to the actual second tweet. First tweet, just asking you to share your memories of May the 4th and Star Wars, because we're all just fans. We're all just cool. Follow-up tweet. By sharing your message with us using hashtag May the 4th, you agree to our use of the message and your account name in all media, and our terms of use are here, DisneyTermsOfUse.com. Okay, so now if you tweet something using hashtag May the 4th, Disney says that that's under their terms of use. You agree to our use of the message and your account name in all media, and our terms of use are here. So it's not a part of the original tweet, which they could have included in the original tweet. The original tweet was pretty short. But then you also, not only are you not aware, made aware of this stipulation in the original tweet, you still then have to go to another website where Disney's legal team will fully communicate the usage of a hashtag they did not originate. Disney did not come up with May the 4th. Disney didn't even own Star Wars when people started playing the game, you know, the delicious pun of creating Star Wars Day on May the 4th. So this hit a pretty decent backlash. There were a number of articles written about it. I mean, I think even one made it to like the New York Times. You know, Disney owns you now if you tweet May the 4th. And so there was one other additional legal stipulation in another tweet reply. And so now we get to the third part of this tweet trilogy. The above language applies only to replies to this tweet using hashtag May the 4th and mentioning at Disney Plus. These replies may appear in something special on May the 4th. Don't feel like a tool or a part of a corporate machine for a multi-billion dollar organization. You know, don't worry about, you know, the legal ramifications of us owning your intellectual property, the media you generate, or your likeness in perpetuity. But, you know, you just have some fun and do something special on May the 4th. But, you know, terms and conditions may apply. So yes, huge backlash. They did a follow-up to their follow-up, but I really want you to look at the numbers here. So that initial tweet that came out from Disney Plus, 4,300 comments, 858 retweets. The second tweet where they share the Disney terms of use, only 1,200 retweets, but because of the view I'm in, I can't see how many comments. Let's see how many comments. Can I see how many comments? So 7,600 comments or replies and 1,200 and shares. And then the last one, another 172 retweets for the follow-up to the follow-up. So 4,300 initial comments or initial tweet replies to that first Disney Plus tweet. I wonder how many of those people actually saw the follow-up, you know, the legalese follow-up that should have been part of the disclosure if you were going to start capturing people's tweets and likeness and owning that media in perpetuity. I feel you have run afoul of actual disclosure. So, you know, if I put out a tweet and I say, hey, I'm going to use the media that you generate, something tells me I would be held to a legal standard where the disclosure of that usage would be a part of the original message, and a follow-up message would be deemed insufficient. It would be insufficient for me to reply to myself and say, oh, by the way, gonna own your likeness in perpetuity. Just letting you know, but just pay attention to the main tweet. Whatever you need to know is in the second tweet. It's a different conversation. We want to have fun because we're a quirky, fun media organization. We're not a soulless corporate giant. So, I really want to reach out to Legal and see if he'd have any thoughts on how do you properly clear usage and likeness, and is a tweet reply sufficient disclosure for someone giving up their content? Because I don't think it is. Two Spirits 411 saying good morning. let me get this down. Pata saying this is not a nice move, but with harsher language. Q3 Becker, I loved the backlash. Root Knight 5, way to ruin the whole thing. Dave Burns, I am a slave to the mouse. Charlie Spirit Song, way to ruin it. Such insidiousness. JMX Warrior, they just want to own it. They're idiots. Dave Burns, they paid extraordinarily good money for that IP one. That's hilarious. Oh, Goran Petrovic, law should be a part of regular schooling. We wouldn't feel like sheep every once in a while. And Root Knight saying, yes, I would vote for law as a school subject. In a future where content, intellectual property, usage, rights, streaming, you know, where gaming and YouTubing and vlogging are actual career tracks now, having a decent basic understanding of your rights, commentary and critique, fair use, public policy, the legal system would be so huge as an educational addition to being a citizen of technology in the 21st century. Yeah, it's hilarious. Let me get that out of the way there. So Disney stepping in a bad, sucking a lot of the fun out of May the 4th Be With You. And, I don't know, like now I'm not even going to hate watch the last Star Wars movie on Disney Plus. I'm probably still going to hate watch it. It's funny because it's not as good as it should have been. Matt Tyler, my terms say, if you say my name ever, I own all your future posts and rights to your channel. But I mean, like, you didn't put out a message encouraging me to participate first. So I feel like there needed to be some additional disclosure, Matt, so that you can't just take all of my intellectual property. See, you're on my stream right now, and my terms of service say that if you comment in my live chat, then you waive all rights to my intellectual property and that I own your likeness in perpetuity. So when I'm on your stream, Dave Burns, media law is so hard to teach and keep up on, but it's one of my favorite subjects. I'll put it out there. I mean, if you guys want to nerd out, there's a book by Donaldson Califf, Commentary and Critique. I think I've got it over there. Clearance and Copyright. That's the name of the book. Clearance and Copyright. Donaldson Califf, they were the law firm that we had on retainer when we were producing our movie review show. We were trying to navigate fair use, and it still didn't matter because even if we were legally correct, YouTube just kept pulling all of our videos for movies you may have missed. But that book, if you want to get into the law of how you are allowed to use copyrighted materials for things like documentary filmmaking, they wrote the book on it. Clearance and Copyright, Donaldson Califf. It's not a fast-paced zinger of a read, but it is fascinating to see what the actual legal system reflects on when they hear a case about copyright infringement. Gary the Fireman, Disney stock down 3.5% today. that's hilarious. All right, one last story. Because we've been talking about this, and it's been a very troubling aspect of modern life, is the spread of bad information and how bad information can infect like a virus. It is especially sensitive territory for an old school nerd like myself. I'm obviously a more left-leaning individual. I would never claim to be a libertarian, but I still have this idealized notion of the internet being a place for free exchange of information and access to information. And we've built so much of the internet on private companies, on private institutions. That policing content on the internet is really scary territory. Last week, we talked about deplatforming and YouTube removing channels. There was another, who is it, David Icke? I don't know how you pronounce his name, but one of the originators of this, like, destroy 5G towers, they're killing people, conspiracy theories, was just removed from YouTube. Ultimately, that kind of deplatforming, I feel, is a responsible reaction to someone actively participating in the spread of misinformation, bad information, to a point where there's like malicious mischief that's being conducted because of this information. This also makes me very anxious about who Google might target as a future spreader of bad information, because that is a direct action, and YouTube has a vested interest in maintaining their platform's profitability, how they make money on advertising and streams and views. That to me seems like it will win in a discussion on who gets removed from their service. Dave Burns, do not speak his name. It will destroy the stream. That's actually a good point. I worry I haven't been as careful protecting my my YouTube side of this. Last week, the video took like 8 hours to properly publish on YouTube. It wasn't demonetized, but it was one of my worst performing podcasts, and I was not being very careful with my situation winks. But this is an article coming by way of fizz.org. So this might be a nice happy medium. Instead of just knee-jerk reactionarily deplatforming people that we know are bad actors and they're not spreading good information, this is the headline. Red flagging misinformation could slow the spread of fake news on social media. I don't see a byline on this article, so I don't know who wrote it. Hold on, let me scroll down. Nope, I have no idea who wrote this, but it's at fizz.org, and I did drop the link in the live chat. The dissemination of fake news on social media is a pernicious trend with dire implications for the 2020 presidential election. Indeed, research shows that public engagement with spurious news is greater than with legitimate news from mainstream sources, making social media a powerful channel for propaganda. A new study on the spread of disinformation reveals that pairing headlines with credibility alerts from fact checkers, the public, news media, and even AI can reduce people's intention to share. However, the effectiveness of these alerts varies with political orientation and gender. The good news for truth seekers, official fact-checking sources are overwhelmingly trusted. So this is a survey. It's a pretty limited survey. I want to say they had 15, yes, computing involved an online study of around 1,500 individuals. So this is not comprehensive by any large degree, but it's a step in the right direction for analyzing behavior and coming up with ways that we can start untangling some of this mess that we've built. We've built social media on this, like, gotta go viral kind of machinery. You know, big views, big numbers, spreading this content. How fast can it spread? How hard can it hit? That's fine, but it also is a huge opportunity for people to game these systems to spread misinformation. Like we were talking about with cooking channels. Cooking channels on YouTube are now being dominated by this like Russian warehouse of content creators, where channel after channel after channel are just blowing up and hitting like seven figure subscriber bases, and they're, you know, outviewing PewDiePie, you know, on YouTube. PewDiePie is actually not the top viewed YouTuber. These fake cooking recipe channels are, and they're branching out into other media. They're becoming platforms for dissemination of political propaganda. And there's almost no oversight of how they create content, and they can spread information at an alarming rate because of this huge reach, because they've done a really good job of gaming what YouTube thinks is popular content. But they're just farms. This is like one of the world's largest media organizations and conglomerates, and it's built on those like tasty, you know, little GIF recipes. But there's some pretty ugly stuff happening in the background when we look at how this content is being produced and how it's manipulating these algorithms. So if we could start devising systems to put like big warnings, I have zero faith in Facebook, like less than none. I have negative faith in Facebook these days. But if every time you shared, you know, a story from a less than reputable site, there was like a big red outline and like an add-on to that link saying, oh, by the way, this is fake. I feel like that would be enough. I feel too many people just trust the feed that they get from Facebook. You know, there's kind of that old school mentality, like, well, you can't be on TV if you're just lying. They wouldn't let someone on TV if they just lied. And for some reason, especially with some of the more vulnerable elderly members of our society, they kind of treat Facebook the same as a media organization. Oh, it showed up on my feed. I guess the former president is engaging in nefarious activities. And you're like, that's not real. It's easily disproven. Oh, they just trusted it like it was on TV news. Okay. So now I feel like if there's an opportunity, like a Twitter, a Facebook, a YouTube, instead of rushing out to completely banhammer individuals, which while there's the schadenfreude of right now, it's happening to people that I viscerally disagree with and I feel are terrible, terrible bad actors in this space, it makes me nervous in the long run that so much of our public communication is built on a private company's infrastructure and that they have all the control in how editorial is disseminated on their platform. I think a more appropriate step would be something like what they're recommending in this article. Whenever a news story goes out, if it's instantly linked with fact checking, then people seem to do a better job of evaluating the truthiness of that article. We've got a lot of commentary on this right here. First of all, LB, LeBaron Burton is watching on Periscope. Everyone just give him a little fist bump. He's a good dude and makes delicious popcorn. Surf Jesus. So they manipulate the algorithms. I mean, yeah, I mean, right now, there's no such thing as gaming the algorithm or satisfying the algorithm. When you see these YouTube gurus, oh, this is how you get your views up, and this is how you get, you know, catch the attention of audience and what to do with your thumbnails. Gaming the algorithm is the same thing as satisfying the algorithm. Only talk about popular content or only talk about popular topics and make wacky thumbnails. And that's a recipe for success on YouTube. You don't want to make videos like that. You don't want to make thumbnails like that. So you're gaming the algorithm. But the algorithm is now fixated on content that has worked before being popular and higher viewed content moving forward. So they're one and the same. I'm saying manipulating in that we're talking about, I would point you back to, I want to say it was 2 weeks ago, we were talking about food channels on the podcast, and we've got some other links in there. But when you dig deeper, you'll see like dozens of these YouTube channels that are cranking out this low effort content, and they're basically just like, you know, we human farms of cooking channels and entertainment channels and DIY crafts and things like that. And then you have kind of a built-in army of people that are watching this so that they can also highlight content from a new channel that they create, and it all just keeps snowballing. Tens of these channels with, you know, what their YouTube play buttons with 6 and 7 figure subscriber bases. So it's pretty shocking. Sentinel 909, in summation, by censoring misinformation, you give those who believe in it legitimacy. And again, I'm torn on that. You deplatform someone who's spreading bad information, the people who were already followers, you're absolutely correct. They dig in their heels. But I wonder, like, were they reachable anyway? Like, were you really going to be able to change any of their minds? And I'm doubtful. The benefit of deplatforming is hopefully mitigating the spread of that information to other people who might be impressionable. So I understand that as a tactic. But it makes me nervous because I don't believe that this is an open system with any type of oversight that we can complain about. Google responds to their shareholders. They don't respond to content creators. They don't respond to the audience. We're all the product. If you're watching something on YouTube or you're making something on YouTube, you are the product that they are selling. Root 95. To trust Facebook, you might have to put your head into the sand for far too long. Agreed. Pata, my coworkers were complaining because a video they shared got taken down and they were claiming it was censorship. And that's not how censorship works. From Natakun, I had to shut down hard among my family and friends when they got that video about the iPhone burning steel wool. I mean, like, and again, think about how, like, joke memes spread. You know, oh, you can charge your battery in your microwave. Whew. Huh. And again, obviously that's like a joke, but I know people put iPhones in microwaves when they saw videos like that. So this is the hope. This is from I don't know how to say your name, Alice Bockley. Traditional content services such as YouTube will have to adapt or they will lose audience to ever newer and more innovative platforms. We've been saying that, and I don't believe that YouTube is an institution, right? I feel there's still room for someone to come along and out YouTube. I mean, you can look at the huge collection of adult entertainment sites from MindGeek, and you're like, there are ways to combat YouTube as a platform. I don't think anyone really cares to try and go head to head against YouTube, but for all this time that we've said, hey, this could be a competitor, or this might be a way to unseat the popularity of YouTube,
none of that's really come to pass, and none of it really seems to have resonated or changed consumer behavior. So instead, I think what we're going to have to see first is some kind of cratering, a misstep or a creator exodus or some type of major failing of YouTube first, and then everyone's going to be reacting to that and scrambling to try and find another solution. While it doesn't bring me much joy to be competing against a humongous, almost trillion-dollar company in Google by streaming on a platform owned by another multi-billion-dollar corporation like Amazon, you know, it has been an interesting experiment seeing how diversifying my content portfolio has kind of helped. You know, I really like doing my podcast here on Twitch, and I haven't had any issues with Twitch streaming for talking about some sensitive political topics. I've been seeing some numbers growing. If you watch my videos, my public videos on YouTube, you're watching the lowest quality version of that video. If you go to somegadgetguy.com, the exact same video is going to be in higher quality and at a faster frame rate. And so those are all hosted on Twitch, and monetizing on Twitch and participating on Twitch, there's potential there. It's still not going to be the same kind of social experience as YouTube, but I can offer my audience a higher quality product and not give everything to Google. There's a public version, lowest quality on YouTube, and then there's sort of a just for people who are really following me on my website, free of the algorithm. You're getting a higher quality video there, and people seem to be tracking that now. It's starting to resonate a little. I like that. So again, until we really change behavior, until you stop relying on the easiest algorithm automated services to just spoon feed you what's going to be popular today, well, that's really difficult for general consumers, but we can be the start of changing some of that behavior. Well, and see, and this is what I mean, Goran Petrovic. In these times, I feel like we have no choice. Choice is just an illusion. You'll be used this way or another by big boys openly or secretly. So, yeah, I mean, when I say choice, I'm saying I can choose to stream my content on YouTube. I can choose to stream my content on Amazon. Not great choices, but the more competition we have in this space, and the reason why this podcast is also streamable on Periscope and Microsoft and Facebook, is to diversify, is to spread that out and to see where do people engage and how do they want to engage, and I'm giving them the option. All of these are major corporate entities. It'll be a while before I can afford something that streams off of my own server that can really support the load of even my sized audience. But there's the potential there, and that's what I want to build towards. It's all slow going. We're navigating huge ships and trying to redirect how people interact. And I still have a little hope. Not a lot of hope, but I still have a little hope. Hey, and Fat Produce is in the live chat now. Everyone say, hey, Andrew, just in time for our Reddit plug. All right, let's get this set up here. Andrew's a good dude. Everyone say, hey, Andrew. sorry, just got a question from Gary the Fireman. Is it more monetarily for you to watch your videos from? So the actual monetization, I've talked about this on the podcast before. It's technically against YouTube terms of service for me to show you like exact numbers publicly on their like CPM and stuff. But the best financial contribution is Patreon, because that is a direct interaction between me and the audience. My CPM on YouTube has consistently dropped, except for this last 28-day period, where my view numbers and my watch time have all been up around like 30 to almost 40%, and my monetization finally crept back up into the positive. So I'm up like 5%. I'd have to look up the numbers. I don't know exactly what they are right now. But it took an almost 40% improvement to my metrics to stop
the downward spiral of making less money month over month. The amount of effort that that has required has been humongous. Is absolutely not worth what YouTube is paying out for this substantial improvement in my viewer engagement. If that were the only monetization, I would have pulled the plug on my YouTube channel. I'd have to. There is literally zero benefit for me to be working that hard for such a meager improvement to the monetization and ad rates on YouTube. So when it comes to Twitch and the fact that Twitch is monetizing, and I have been, you know, getting payouts from Twitch, they're way, way lower than YouTube. I'm a little less concerned about this first foray. I mean, this is the first year that I've been doing this split content launch. Highest quality goes to Patreon, medium quality directly to somegadgetguy.com, lowest quality public on YouTube. Really, I just wanted to put my money where my mouth was. If I'm dissatisfied with how YouTube treats content creators, it makes zero sense for me to put all my eggs in YouTube's basket. And they've shown me that when I make significantly more popular content, I am not rewarded for that effort. So really what I would recommend and what I would suggest is, if you want to watch higher quality stuff, like you care to watch higher quality stuff, go to somegadgetguy.com. I'll make less money on YouTube, but that was already the trend. That's been the trend since September of last year, that I will continue to make less money on YouTube. So if I'm already making less money on YouTube, engage with me on my own personal site. That's where I can have direct conversations. I don't have to worry about the comments on somegadgetguy.com potentially demonetizing my videos. Remember, I'm responsible for the comments on my videos on YouTube. If really ugly comments show up on the regular, that's going to impact recommendations, search, and monetization for my videos. So it is like mute and move on. I'm just banhammering like crazy on my YouTube channel because like I can't have someone else's ugliness impact what little monetization I actually make on YouTube. So it's a better experience all around. I control it better. Twitch is starting to monetize and pay out, and you get a higher quality product. Like, I feel like that's a win-win for all of us, right? So if we're going to make this stuff better, we have to stop giving YouTube the de facto default status and all of our attention. So again, if you want to help change the situation on this stuff, I'd appreciate people sharing my links directly from somegadgetguy.com instead of sharing from YouTube. And then people will see a higher quality version of the videos that I'm sharing. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadowd.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadowd.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
Gary the Fireman, sorry I typed gibberish, but I'm glad you speak gibberish. All right, let's get into the Reddit. Every podcast has a subreddit, you know, a community place or a public place people can meet, share links. Some subreddits are about sharing news articles that they want the hosts to talk about. Some are just fun hangouts. Some are just fan service or, you know, come tell me how great I am because I have a podcast. My subreddit is continuing on in a mission that I have become most passionate about. I was just talking about the difficulties of being a content creator and monetizing your content on YouTube and why a lot of us are looking at alternatives to YouTube as being the sole place for us to share the content we make. It has never been more challenging or more difficult for an up-and-coming content creator than it is today. It has also never been more challenging for an established content creator to continue producing high-quality content and being properly compensated for their time. So my subreddit is focused on helping promote content we feel deserves more attention. My subreddit is not about me, though I do occasionally show up on my own subreddit. So remember, this last week, I belched out a ton of videos, articles, Newegg. There was a lot going on with the Some Gadget Guy, my personal channel, and with Newegg. So these are the top stories. If you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, this is our community. This is where we can hype and highlight. You can self-promote. If you're making something and you can't share it on the larger subreddits, come to our subreddit. Hopefully we can get you a little bit more audience and help build some popularity, get you closer to your own monetization. But again, I'm trying to make this a more organic and more inclusive community with a broader focus on technology out there. So let me get this out of the way here. These are the top stories and top posts. So this week I'm doing all top posts, not just top stories. The number one is listening to Some Gadget Guy on the Android Central podcast, and it's just a screenshot of someone listening to that Android Central conversation that I had with Daniel over on the AC podcast. Super appreciative that people thought that that was an interesting conversation. I had so much fun recording it. The second top post is a photo of someone's workstation after doing some work, setting up a work from home setup by Abhishek177. Shot a shot of their desk using a OnePlus 6T. And you're like, That's a cool layout. You know, it was just a laptop and a monitor and a tablet. Looks like an iPad, keyboard and mouse. That's a cool work setup. And again, just got some upvotes and people were stoked to check it out. But then the number three, we're finally getting to some actual videos coming by way of user Tech Valor. Trenton Marshall, come on, show his thing. Come on, show his channel. Trenton Marshall, he only has 5,000 subscribers. This is a travesty, and I am disappointed in humanity that Trent is not pulling a larger subscriber base with the content that he produces. It is thoughtful. It is engaging. He likes to pick apart the media and the marketing of different, you know, major manufacturers and corporations. And so he's got a video, a two-year-old Google Pixel 3 XL alternative option to the iPhone SE 2020. So maybe you were thinking about shopping a less expensive phone and the iPhone SE had your eye. He's just taking a look back on what a two-year-old Pixel might be able to do better and where there might be compromises against the new iPhone SE 2020. That's a helpful video. That video deserves more traffic. And Trenton's channel deserves to be shared more frequently because, again, his take on the tech industry is incisive. It's thoughtful. There's a little bit of an edge to it. There's some snarky commentary, and he doesn't pull punches. I mean, it doesn't matter if he's personally a fan of any one manufacturer. I've seen him go after pretty much everybody. So this is a perfect example of the mission of Glowing Rectangles, of this subreddit. If his content gets upvoted and is more visible on a smaller subreddit, there is a greater chance of that content being spread and shared on larger subreddits. So it's a whole bunch of Reddit etiquette. Obviously, if you're not a heavy user of Reddit, some of that stuff can be a little difficult to figure out. But let's say someone were to share, cross-post from our Glowing Rectangles, cross-post this video over on a Pixel subreddit or on an iPhone subreddit or on an Android subreddit, that would help spread the word on some really good content that's being produced. And that's what I'm talking about when I say active participation. You catch a video, you watch it, and you go, well, that was a really neat video. I hope they make something again in the future. And then you go and eat a sandwich and you don't pay it any more mind. That content creator didn't get much support. So you don't need to go and blow up your Facebook feed. You don't need to go and like become a hype machine for Trent on Twitter. But if you retweet it, that's possible exposure for a handful of other people out there. You post it on Facebook, someone else might be interested in a different take on an inexpensive phone. And if you cross-post it to another subreddit, you are helping to spread the word on engagement for Trent. A couple simple actions that don't take much but a little bit of time out of your day could make a huge difference to a YouTube channel that only has 5,000 subscribers. It's now becoming like my personal mission. Like Trent, Viper, and some of my standbys, like LFA's channel has been growing, but I think LFA's channel should be growing faster than it is. Like I want to see Trent have an extra zero at the end of that of subscriber count by next year. Can we make that a goal? Can we get Trent and Marshall 45,000 subscribers in the next year? I think we could, but we can't just passively watch his video and go, well, that was nifty, and then walk away. We actually have to do something to encourage more participation. So I'm actually going to try and kick on the RTX voice again. Let's see if this borks. Someone tell me if I go robot voice, but the leaf blowers are out in force. So I've turned on NVIDIA RTX voice, and I see that I still have levels, and I'm just going to double check on the RTX voice app. It says default device, remove background noise. I've got the noise suppression on. So let's see if this sounds terrible. Someone tell me if this sounds terrible. From LFA reviews, I've been trying to share more often in the subreddit. The sharing is phenomenal. For everybody that's watching, sharing the subreddit can help too, but engagement. If you share a video, go through the other videos and click the upvotes on some other videos. That helps the popularity on Reddit. Throw some comments out there. That helps the popularity on Reddit. That traffic links to Google. Google SEO tracks how Reddit trends follow different topics. So, you know, like you'll see like, hey, upvote this image. And every time someone searches for a picture of bikinis, then this is the top photo that Google will show on bikinis. That actually works. If one of these videos or articles got 150,000 upvotes, which would never happen, that would rank huge on YouTube search algorithms, and it would blow up for that channel's that channel creator. That would be huge for that channel creator. So please keep sharing. We have been getting incredible sharing. Let me go through the rest of the top. It's right outside the window. It is driving me nuts. That damn leaf blower. The Newegg video came in at number 4, the home production tips and tricks. LFA reviews, number 5, rounding out the top 5 with the OnePlus Bullets Wireless Z. Some early impressions on OnePlus's new Bullets, which look pretty decent to me. My hashtag 2020 hearing is in the number 6 spot. iPhone 7 Plus in 2020 review coming by way of Painfully Honest Tech. Joshua Vergara, Pixel Buds 2020, RTX voice on from the Newegg channel. And then a really thoughtful video from Ted Talks. Ted has 11 subscribers. I'm going to make Ted 12 subscribers if this would stay open. So Ted Talks, he did a pair of videos just talking about what is the difference between a reviewer or an influencer. And they're really thoughtful videos. This is a person a dozen subscribers into starting his YouTube career, rounding out the top 10 on our glowing rectangles. I guarantee you, you would not have seen TED Talks in your YouTube feed. Not with 12 subscribers. But here he is, top 10 on this little subreddit. We could help that dude out. If you want thoughtful commentary on the tech industry,
that would help. That would help significantly. Do you want him to keep making videos about these topics and sharing his thoughts on it? I do. I thought his first video on influencers versus reviewers was a really well argued and a very passionate take on the world of technology. So that's the plug for the Reddit. Let me get this out of the way here. is it really bad? I mean, is it really off the mark? Someone tell me if this is, because it's gonna be trying to filter in and out. Is the RTX? It's more robotic when you hammer the GPU. It's fixed. It's fixed. It's gone now. Okay. Well, if it's better now, I'm gonna keep running it for a little bit. So instead of saying it's fixed or it's gone or it's this, just say it's good or it's bad. And I'll try and keep up with the live chat. But like I said, there's a leaf blower right there. It's right outside my window. I know I'm yelling because I can't even hear myself above the din of the leaf blower. Okay, let me take another sip of water here. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Content creators need your help. They need active support and active participation. For those of you who have the means, those direct contributions, when I see people dropping super chats in live streams or trying to support something like a Patreon or buy me a cup of coffee, that is huge. That helps so much for someone who's trying to keep a channel active. But even if you don't have the means to support someone like that, engaged participation, sharing, upvoting, commenting, some additional behavior helps so much in spreading the word and keeping this community vibrant. I don't like that YouTube fixates on top tentpole content creators. All right. Anyway, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Do the gig, win the day, support content creators, and I'm way off track. I've completely jumped the tracks. Let's talk about some gadgets. Xiaomi will now let you opt out of data collection in incognito mode. So this was a story that kind of blew up a little while ago. Xiaomi is apparently tracking your browser behavior, which is not a good look. That's a big security no-no. And it wasn't really properly disclosed. It was just sort of lumped in with whatever terms of service. Oh, by the way, we're going to watch everything you do on this phone. And though we're technically going to try and make this anonymous, it would be pretty easy to untangle your specific behavior and use that to track you. And don't worry, the servers that the information is going up to are totally not really well protected at all. So let me cue this back here. They're making a little bit of a concession, this is coming by way of Adamya Sharma. Oh, I didn't share the link. Let me drop that in the live chat. Get that out of the way there. From the article, Xiaomi has responded to recent allegations of privacy and data collection malpractices by updating the Mi browser, Mi Browser Pro, and Mint browser. The company was under fire from users and cybersecurity experts after a Forbes report detailed how its browsers collect a worrying amount of user data. According to the report, cybersecurity experts found that the Xiaomi browsers recorded all web browsing data of a user, even in incognito mode. What was more worrying, that the researchers presented evidence that the data, including unique device identifiers, was being sent to remote servers with easily crackable encoding. And so now, Dave Burns, run by Equifax. Hilarious. So now, Xiaomi is still going to be tracking everything you do on that browser, but you can now go in to the browser settings and there's an option that allows you to opt out if you use incognito mode. Again, I want you to think about general consumer behavior, and I want you to think about that chain of interaction.
hand someone a phone, they open up a web browser, and they just start searching for things. Okay. And then you tell them, well, I mean, if you're searching for anything sensitive, maybe use incognito mode, and it'll just kind of track you a little bit less. You know, there's going to be less record of your behavior on this browser. Like, okay, yeah, I'll do the incognito mode. And now you tell them, oh, and by the way, if you don't want all of your sensitive searches being shared to a less than secure remote server, you have to open the browser, go into the settings, and find a setting to opt out of aggregated data collection. Aggregated data collection when you're using incognito mode. And then Xiaomi promises, with no evidence that this is actually happening, but they promise they're not going to be tracking your behavior there. So I get it. I get it. I understand why people are so positive on Xiaomi phones. They're cost-effective, budget-priced with great specs. You know, I think the build looks great. I really haven't handled... I handled one Xiaomi phone last year as just sort of a brief hands-on. I mean, we can't get them here in the United States. They don't properly sell in North America, and I don't really import phones. I have enough on my plate. But it seems that a major aspect of what drives down the costs of a Xiaomi is the services backend. And that's how they recoup a significant amount of their money globally, is by partnering with different services providers, with different app providers, with different online media. And that's, you are a part of the business model. They track all of your browsing behavior. And I'm sure there's a monetary value to that information being sold to other organizations. And it seems like they're doing a pretty terrible job of protecting that data. From Fat Produce, I figured there was a big drawback to Xiaomi's pricing on their phones. From Root Night 5, the moment they run the stock browser, they're already hopeless. Yeah, and Root Night 5, again, that's what needs to be made clear here. You go through this process to enable or opt out of this data aggregation, and that's still only going to be in incognito mode. Any regular web browsing behavior, you're still being targeted and tracked, and your unique device identifier information is still going up to another server. Root Night 5, I don't have anything specific against Xiaomi phones, but I don't want to reward their business model. I'd rather pay more, but put it elsewhere. And Pata, I think that's why a lot of people use custom ROMs with Xiaomi phones. I've had critical words about Apple and some of their claims about security, not necessarily living up to the marketing, but that is one significant philosophical difference. An Apple product will cost more for lower quality specs than a Xiaomi. You know, screen size and screen technology and resolution and battery capacity and the number of cameras on the back of their phones. And while Apple will sell you out to Google, they aren't directly intercepting all of your browser behavior to ship that up and sell that off in aggregate. So we'll give Apple kudos there. And that's one reason why a device might cost more. And I've heard this before from Dave Burns too. Xiaomi will sell a phone at cost to make money selling data. I mean, the things I've heard is that Xiaomi will sell a phone below cost because their real money is coming from back-end services. Matt Tyler, Google, Apple, Samsung, Xiaomi, Facebook, F it, I'm going offline. Goran Petrovic, does that imply on Android One A line, that's why Xiaomi is sabotaging it? That I don't know. Again, I'm not as familiar with Xiaomi's product lineup. So what might be selling well or what might not be doing as well, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's This was sort of a strange turn to watch because, again, they made such a big headline out of, okay, we'll let you opt out in incognito mode. And like that kind of misses the point. The reason why people are upset is not like, okay, well, you even tracked us in incognito mode. It's that you tracked us. It's that you're tracking us and shipping this information off to servers and not protecting my privacy. That's why we're upset. Okay, incognito mode. Now you whiners will be happy. That's kind of missing the point. I just got a bunch of comments all at once. Matt Tyler, Firefox Android beta is my browser. I have been really happy with Android. Android's Firefox browser, the Firefox browser for Android. And I do use the Facebook container plugin. I'm trying to see if any of the other container plugins might work too, but it's been working great. And I like cross-platform, the syncing between my desktop and my phone on Firefox has been great. Dave Burns, Gecko is such a good HTML engine, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Now, Firefox did have a couple little minor security gremlins. I want to say it was about a month back. But I've seen Mozilla iterate really aggressively on squashing some of those security bugs. It's been really enjoyable watching them iterate, even though, they're like a distant fourth place in the browser run right now. Like, I think Microsoft's Chromium build of Edge is now the second place browser behind Chrome. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong there. And Fat Produce, a good browser a friend recommended to me is Brave. Brave is pretty solid too. I haven't used it nearly as much. But yeah, that would also be another... Again, I'm fronting something like Firefox because it still feels like a really well complete service. It is accessible on Windows, on Mac OS, on Android, Linux. Like, I have the same sort of global benefits of Chrome. You know, what made Chrome so interesting, like, and how your browser could like send links back and forth between desktop and phone or desktop and tablet, how you were running software in your browser and Chrome was sort of its own operating system and that became Chrome OS and Chromebooks. You know, almost all of the perks that I went to for Chrome have been replicated in Firefox, and Firefox seems to be performing a little bit better for overhead. So, you know, like on my monster workstation, Chrome eats up more resources than Firefox seems to for the same benefits for what I liked in using Chrome. So looking at these alternatives, I would also recommend checking out Brave. You know, maybe it's a UI thing. Maybe it's a securities thing. Maybe it's a plugins thing or a flexibility thing. There are options out there and some really, really good options. I have not tried OH browser. I don't know OH. Matt Tyler, Opera browser, that's totally safe, right? But yeah, getting away from Xiaomi and the frustration of yet another data security scandal, we're in the gadget block. We're talking about some gadget news. I don't like covering leaks, rumors, and, you know, renders. But the reason I'm highlighting this one is because I desperately want this to be real. I think the potential of this is medium. So let me share this link down in the live chat. This is coming by way of my old stomping ground, pocketnow.com. And I've had some conversations with Concept Creator. I don't need to go into the backstory here. We're talking about a render on a Nokia, which would completely recall the look of the old Lumia series. And now I desperately, achingly want this to be real and I want this to be true. This is a potential render on what a Nokia 9.3 PureView could look like. And it looks like the love child of a Lumia 920 and like what would we say? Like a, not a, I mean, it looked the camera module of a 1020 made it onto the body of like a skinny 1520. Is that what we're saying this kind of looks like? But they did a render in that old school Lumia Canary Yellow, the black Oreo disc for the camera module, and that we're seeing rumored specs, even though that this phone has been delayed, we're seeing rumored specs on like a crazy high resolution camera sensor. They're saying it might get that 108 megapixel camera sensor with a 64 to back it up. And then they're saying we might see, this could be one of the first phones with an in-display camera. So their renders show an almost all screen front face with no notch, no hole punch, no cutout, no interruption of the display, but that the selfie camera would live under the screen, as would the fingerprint sensor. And the thing I love about this render, so you know, we see the LEDs for the flash, we see this multi-camera array, there would be a time-of-flight sensor, obviously, probably a zoom and an ultra-wide instead of the Nokia 9's, you know, five camera module just to make one photo. The thing I love seeing is in their render on their main screen is that it's got a headphone jack. So if that comes to pass, that would make me exceedingly excited. I love this design. I love the old school Lumia form factor, flat front face, you know, an all screen, no selfie camera cutout or notch hole, a headphone jack. Like, really, the only thing that's missing from, like, a crazy monster camera phone for this manufacturer would be a dedicated shutter button. Just getting us back to having your phone be a camera like the 1020. All right, well, we'll give you a dual-stage shutter button so that it can really be a camera phone. So, the rumors are, like I said, 108 megapixel camera sensor, 64 megapixel, probably a zoom or a backup sensor. Wide angle telephoto macro lens, a 4,500 milliamp hour battery, and IP68 rating on something that looks like an old school Lumia would make me silly, silly excited. The Nokia 9 was, I should do a follow up on the Nokia 9. It was a very frustrating phone to cover. It lagged behind bad on software updates. There's now a controversy happening on the Android 10 builds of the Nokia 9. If it's really using all of the camera sensors like it originally was, people are saying photo quality has dropped significantly. And that part of the reason why is they tried to improve processing performance by disabling some of the camera sensors, which I haven't gone back to test or to re-examine. But it's little things. The build is gorgeous. It is such a premium built device. Fingerprint sensor is garbage. It's the worst fingerprint sensor I've used on any phone. But I don't think people realized, like, the headphone jack. So there is no built-in headphone jack on the Nokia 9. But if you use a pass-through dongle, like they included one in the box, and like you can pop in the OnePlus headphone dongle, it works too. The Nokia 9 was actually one of the top headphone performers of its generation. So with all of the Snapdragon 855 phones out there, it outperformed Samsung, the built-in headphone jack on the Galaxy S10. It hung in there against the iPhone dongle. It's slightly outperforming it. It's a slightly louder amp that's built into the phone. It's really a shame. I mean, like, little lifestyle perks like that, the phone got so much right. And the depth of field, the time of flight data, being able to manipulate layers of depth blur, so good. It's so good. And then they kind of fell apart on supporting it, on getting updates out for it. It was just kind of a bummer. From Three-Legged Couch, that is one sweet-looking Nokia. I would love to rock a phone like this. Dave Burns, they borked the landing, if you will. They really did. I need to pull that phone out again. Like, I know I'm in the middle of iPhone SE videos and OnePlus 8 videos, and we're going to be talking about TCL here, and I'm probably going to be getting hands-on with the TCL soon. But I need to revisit that Nokia 9. from Fat Produce, I just wish that Nokia would work more closely with Light, the company Light, and iterate on the technology used in the Nokia 9. I'm actually kind of okay if they walk away from the multi-camera array to capture a greater dynamic range. Without going too deep into the weeds, and like I said, I still want to wrap up the TCL 10 is our kind of final gadget talking point. I've been shooting on the OnePlus 8 Pro. The OnePlus 8 Pro's new 48 megapixel camera sensor is astonishingly good. Its hardware so good, it does a really good job of making up for some of the software kludginess in OnePlus's camera app. And a much, much larger surface area sensor with the way that it bends pixels to make a lower resolution final JPEG, I think is probably the better solution than going multi-camera array for one focal length. So, you know, the fact that there are like five cameras on the back of the Nokia 9, but it's only for one field of view, I think pairing the OnePlus 8 or just a larger, you know, like even these 64 megapixel sensors, like on the V60 and on the Galaxy S20, these 1/1.7-inch sensors, pairing that with much, much better time of flight data, I think is a much bigger advantage than going with five smaller camera sensors. I just think it's no contest. If we could get Nokia's image processing and time of flight data stapled onto a sensor with the advantages of the OnePlus 8 Pro or of the LG V60, that's peanut butter jelly time. That to me is a significant advantage over multi-camera strategies. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a megapixel coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious megapixels. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Pita, I'm actually okay if they walk away from the multi-camera array. I am. I didn't mean to make it rhyme like that, but I totally am. I can't say enough nice things. That OnePlus 8 Pro camera sensor, it's 1/1.4-inch sensor, 48 megapixels, so it looks like it's the same performance as the OnePlus 8. The pixel size, when you crop it down, when you pixel bin it down to a 12-megapixel sensor, you're talking about photo sites that are roughly two-thirds the size of what's in one of my Panasonic Micro Four Thirds cameras. So my G9 has like 3.3 micron pixels. The OnePlus 8 Pro has like 2.4. Yeah, I think it's 2.4 micron pixels. We are so close to mirrorless camera performance on smartphones. That's insane. It is so crazy. What an advantage that sensor is now providing to a phone like the OnePlus 8 Pro. And again, I mean, you're going to pay for it. That is the most expensive phone that OnePlus has ever made. It is almost as expensive as a Galaxy S20. I can't tell you, man. if I had to pick between a Galaxy S20 and a OnePlus 8 Pro, and I'm looking at photography, the photographic quality of the images that I get from that phone, with a little handholding because of the kludgy camera app, huge. Huge. So good. Aditya Anil, so bigger the pixel size, the better, question mark? Overall sensor size, big advantage. Larger photo sites, better for low light capture. You're dealing with a softer depth of field blur, even an advantage in depth of field blur from the S20 to the OnePlus 8 Pro, from the V60 to the OnePlus 8 Pro. It's sizable. It is really good. Root Knight 5, glass not exploding helps that decision, I'd guess. Yeah, some really rough spots for some of the folks out there in that stupid large domino camera sensor module on the Galaxy S20. Same issue that we had on the LG V20. I was telling people on the V20 Pocket Now coverage, leave the plastic guard on your V20 camera because that glass will break really easily. Moving right along. So I do not have a TCL 10L. Come heck or high water, I am absolutely going to be spending time with the TCL 10 Pro. That is my showdown phone. I want to see what TCL can do in that $450 to $500 price range, where an iPhone SE 2020 is going to cost around $450 for 128 gig of storage, where a Pixel 4a or 5a or whatever they call it is going to be starting around that $399 price tier. That to me is going to be the winning mid-ranger powerhouse bang for buck. I want to see what a manufacturer can do comfortably sub $500. So, the TCL 10L is going to be somewhere sub $300. And even that phone looks like an absolute monster. And Cameron Burrell says hi on Periscope. Hi, Cameron. So this is a photo from my bay, TK Bay, showing off his TCL 10L. Gorgeous blue, nice glass refraction, rainbow lighting effects as light bounces off that back cover. And it's in blue because blue is always the correct choice for any smartphone out there. But I mean, just look at this thing. It's insane. Rear fingerprint sensor, dual flash, dual book-ended LED flashes on opposite sides of the phone, and a quad array of camera sensors. This is a $250 phone. $249.99. And Goran Petrovic, what's the processor in the 10 Pro? This is rocking a Snapdragon 665. So that is no slouch. The 660s are great chipsets. You will not feel like this is a compromised or kludgy device. The 660 was also in the smaller Pixel 3a. JMX Warrior, but one, red is the correct choice for a phone. No, blue is always the correct choice for a phone. Red can look good for a phone. Blue always looks good. I'm just messing with you. So, get this out of the way here. I'm going to be following TK because I love what, you know, I just love his channel in general, but what he has to say about a $250 phone, I'll be very curious to see how it performs. And especially from TCL, they're known for making TVs. So something tells me TCL is going to have the budget solution for multimedia consumption this year. I think they are going to hit hard for people who like to like stream video and watch movies and engage with content, because it even has a headphone jack. The video that I think folks should really check out, Painfully Honest Tech, it only has 8,500 views. The title of the video is Samsung's Worst Nightmare, and I'm going to have this in the show notes for this podcast too. First of all, let me just click out a screen share here for a second. I finally figured it out. This has bugged me about Jason and Painfully Honest Tech since he started producing on YouTube, but especially most recently. There's just been something I couldn't place. What is it about Jason? He's reminding me of something, or he's his mannerisms or the way he talks, John Corbett. I don't know how many of you people out there were Northern Exposure fans, but John Corbett as the radio DJ from that show, Jason is totally doing that thing where he's got the smooth jazz going on and his hair's a little, quarantine longer, and he's got those great, red framed glasses, and he's putting his thoughts together and is just like a chill, cool jazz vibe. He's doing John Corbett and I love it. Alice Bockley. Dude, oh my God, Northern Exposure. So yeah, sorry. I completely digress. Let's get back and click this back on. He's got an 11-minute video here just chatting about, sort of the market, Samsung missing the market, looking at what budget and mid-ranger phones can do. And he's using the TCL as the example, as the talking point for what are we doing recommending $1,000 phones to average consumers. This is a product that's going to fulfill a lot of that use and probably do it better. $250. $250. For folks of you who are listening to this podcast or watching these streams outside of North America, that's not going to be a shock to you. There has been solid competition, $300 and less, under $300 around the world. Here in the United States, we have so heavily weighted the customer and carrier relationship to focus on leasing a phone over a long period of time rather than just buying a phone and owning it. So consumers go in and they don't even see the price tag of the phone. They just see how much it's going to cost them to lease it every month. Oh, like $40 a month? Okay, that's not too bad. I could do that. $250 phone. $250. So I pulled up the TCL website. I mean, let's check this out. So first of all, I've just got their main site here. So this is for the 10L. I don't think I'm going to go hands-on, too hard with the TCL 10L, but, TCL 10L with Next Vision display and a 48 megapixel AI quad camera, revolutionary visual technology with immersive viewing experience from Next Vision. And I've got all of the HDR stuff that we say we care about. It's a 6.53-inch Full HD Plus display. I think it's got a little punch hole for the selfie. HDR viewing enhancement, brighter and sharper contrast, clearer details, comfortable viewing. And then we get to a quad camera setup. Quad camera. Quad. this is crazy. You're still going to have 4K video. You're doing fine there. This has got a bokeh blur and depth tracking, just like more expensive. I mean, I don't think it's just like more expensive devices, but I'm sure it's going to perform well given the price and the compromises. They tout Qualcomm Snapdragon. Oh yeah, it does have a little hole punch for the selfie camera. 4,000 milliamp hour battery. They're claiming powerful audio. Connect up to 4 headphones or speakers with super Bluetooth for a personalized listening experience. So they're going to have some of the new features in Bluetooth 5 for multi-connections so that you can hook up other devices and use the phone as a hub. That I'm going to be curious to try. I really want to try on a TCL, what happens if I pair 4 different speakers? And how well does that stream between different devices? Because technically what I could then also do is connect 4 different pairs of speakers. So I could have 8 speakers Bluetooth connected all at the same time. That has to be so crappy for phase. But I want to do it just because I can. Let me get into the, I'm going to go into the specs comparison. So this is the 10 Pro versus the 10L. Here, let me scroll this down here. Super dumb setups rock from Dave Burns. LFA reviews. Super Bluetooth. It's like regular Bluetooth, but it's wearing a cape. So we've got the TCL 10 Pro and the 10L. So it looks like both are going to be hitting the USA market. The 10 Pro is going to be a little bit heavier. Yeah, 6.6 ounces versus 6.35 ounces. It doesn't seem like there's much difference. So yeah, the 10 Pro is going to be getting the Snapdragon 675. The 10L is going to be getting the Snapdragon 665. So there should be a little performance bump and a little GPU bump for the 10 Pro. The screens look like they're going to be very similar. They're not exactly the same. It looks like the 10 Pro is actually going to have a slightly smaller screen, but the resolutions are the same. It says 6.47 inch full HD versus the 6.53 inch LCD. Oh, I see what the differences are. Okay. So the 10L has an LCD at 6.5. The 10 Pro will have a 6.47 inch OLED. That's our difference there. All right. So that makes more sense. I wasn't able to figure that out, but I'm smart. I can read words and be smart and say good words. The 10 Pro is going to have a 64 megapixel high res sensor with a 16 megapixel super wide, 5 megapixel macro, and a 2 megapixel super low light camera. So it looks like the the leftmost sensor is the 64, then the 5 megapixel macro. I can't see 6P5P3P5. Okay. But anyway, so the 10L has last year's 48 megapixel sensor. The 10 Pro will have the 64. So we could be getting the same camera sensor in the TCL 10 Pro as we have in the LG V60, which is pretty cool. And that's also, see, and I like this because we're not seeing a gimped telephoto. I don't know that the macro performance on a 5 megapixel sensor is really going to be great, but we're going to be using the 64 megapixel sensor on the 10 Pro to do all of our zooming and cropping. And I'm good with that. I think zoom on the V60 is looking pretty solid. So I think that should be fine. LFA reviews. Juan has the strong vocabulistics. Q3 Becker. You'll never be a top YouTuber if you can't read the spec sheet, man. I'm just going through this on my own. Okay. Let me get through all of these. So yeah, the sensor size. The sensor is a 1/1.7 inch sensor. That 64 megapixel sensor on the 10 Pro is going to be the same sensor that we have on the LG V60. And that's going to be an under $500 phone. That's nuts. Front cameras, a 24 megapixel shooter on the 10 Pro is a 16 megapixel shooter on the 10L. The sensor size is 1/2.8. So the 10 Pro is going to have a sensor which is like two generations old, but what used to be on the backs of our phones is going to be on the front of our phone there. Still only 1080p video, but still, that's pretty decent. 6 gigabytes of RAM. The 10L, 64 gigabyte ROM. The 10 Pro, 128 gigabyte ROM. And then there's a 500 milliamp hour battery difference between the two. The 10 Pro, 4,500 milliamp. The 10L, 4,000 milliamp. I mean, I am not seeing anything that's going to be a deal breaker here. That is just insane. The 10L, 4,000 milliamp hour battery, 48 megapixel main camera sensor, 6.53 inch 1080p plus LCD. The Snapdragon 665, which is a solid mid-ranger performer. That chipset, so a 1080p resolution with a Snapdragon 660 and a 4,000 milliamp hour battery should shame runtime on more expensive devices. I have very high expectations of this hardware combination being a monster marathon media performer. It's going to fall apart a little for super, super high resolution gaming. You know, graphics intense games are going to struggle a little bit on this kit. I mean, just like we saw with the Pixel 3a, but dang, when we see an iPhone SE 2020 at $450, the A13 is going to run circles around a 675, a Snapdragon 675, but it won't do it for long because the battery will plummet and then your phone is basically just a coaster, where I feel like this is going to be a more well-rounded device at $250 and $450. I mean, this is huge. Root Knight 5. The TCL has a better camera than the Xperia 1. Mer. Charlie Spirit Song. What TCL is doing is essentially what Xiaomi and OnePlus did with their early days for value flagship killers. TCL has actually had a really strong track record here. They are the ODM. They are the manufacturer behind Alcatel phones. And if you remember the Idols started a pretty solid conversation on disrupting higher priced devices with decent specs and with decent features on their phones. I want to say my wife and I, we kind of jumped in on the Idol 3. And that came in two form factors. That little, the smaller form factor Idol 3, decent battery. I think it had like a Snapdragon 614, which wasn't great, but a solid, convenient headphone jack, stereo speakers, a nice little screen. Performance was decent. The build of Android was pretty lean, so performance was fluid enough. My wife loved that phone. And I want to say, like, when she got it, it retailed for like $175. Like, you could pick it up stupid cheap. It was easier to replace the phone than it would have been to like replace the screen on a Galaxy S4 or S5 of the time. So Charlie Spirit Song, looks like TCL learned a lot from their relationship with BlackBerry. I mean, I think they've been on this track for a while. The Idols and the Alcatels, I've been a really big fan of what Alcatel branded phones have done. Their licensing has been a little shaky. So like, I think they executed really well for BlackBerry. I think they built great devices for BlackBerry. It just seems to me like BlackBerry as a brand, as a label, just didn't seem very interested in continuing to make phones. But I can't fault TCL. Like, the Key 2 is still a badass communicator today. It is still a great communicator today, even though, you know, it's not the fanciest or the flashiest multimedia phone. The Palm partnership was also a little just weird as a licensing exercise. I liked the idea of it. I think making it licensing the Palm name and then also entering into like some kind of exclusivity with Verizon just inflated costs too high. But I think the idea was a good idea. It's a pocket watch, a smartwatch. Looking at what they're doing with their own label. So now this is a TCL product, not an Alcatel, not a BlackBerry, not a Palm. This is their company first and foremost, just directly relating to consumers. I'm going to be really excited to see what this thing can do. I'm very interested in more options here in North America where we can talk about, like, do you want to spend less? Because you're not really sacrificing a whole lot and you can spend a lot less, and you can spend a lot less with the Samsung and get a Galaxy A series. You can spend a lot less on a Sony and get an Xperia 10. You can spend a lot less on a Moto and get the G series or the Stylus or whatever, you know, sort of mid-rangers that they've been putting out. You can spend less and get a Pixel. You can spend less and get a TCL. We have not had this kind of fleshed out $400 competition for a while. Last year, we were kind of pushing into this. The Pixel 3a blew open that conversation in a big way. And now we're getting the follow through, and the follow through is getting really exciting. iPhones at $400, TCL at $400, Sony and Moto and Pixels and Samsungs at $400. And that's where average consumers should be shopping. It is silly. It is not a good look for us tech geeks to be recommending $700 plus phones to people who genuinely just do need to cover the communications basics. So good. I'm so excited. From King Wing 27, what do you think of the Pixel 4a rumors? They seem to be on point. I'm going to be excited to have a $400 Pixel, hopefully rocking a 670 series chipset. I want more storage options. I would love to see Google stop pretending like 128 is the max. And I would love, even on a cheaper Pixel, to have, you know, a Pixel 4a at 64, a Pixel 4a, a Pixel 4a with 64 gigs of storage at $399. Sure. I think that's fine. Honestly, for the target market, it's a little lean for me, but that makes sense to me. And then just do what Apple did. Give me a 64, give me a 128, give me a 256. And make the 256 a limited edition, kind of like a OnePlus. We're only going to make 1,000 of these 256 gigabyte Pixel 3As, $499, get them while they're hot. Done. You would sell out instantly. And then Google would be on, I mean, like, hey, and we've got our 128s, and if there's enough interest, maybe we'll do a second round of a 256. But everything seems to be exactly where we think a Pixel should be. Design language and implementation of like the camera module, similar to the Pixel 4. Rear fingerprint sensor, which is infinitely better than Face ID if you have to wear a mask when you go out in public. And we know the camera is going to be baller. We know that this is going to be great camera performance at this mid-ranger price. Even against like the iPhone SE, I have no qualms recommending to my family and friends, hey, if camera is important to you, at $400, I think this is going to be one of the best stills shooter of the year with solid video performance. Not the greatest video performance, but decent video performance. And that's not for $400. I mean, genuinely, it's going to be great if all you care about is the shutter button and getting the pretty HDR colors. So I've been very positive on what I've seen, leaks and rumors and what we should expect from a Pixel 4a. sorry, just a bunch of other comments like, oh, Verizon, you ruin everything, coming by Dave Burns. I don't think people understand. So when I say things like, oh man, show me another Snapdragon 865 that's cheaper than a OnePlus 8. I understand that you can like find a phone with a Snapdragon 865 internationally and import it and it's going to be cheaper. But when you do business in the United States, and you have to play ball with different carriers, different bands, different implementations of 5G, different radio management, different antennas, there's a reason why costs go up for similar hardware across the board. The licensing, the support, the carrier certifications, the FCC certifications, all of that increases the price of the phones here. So here in North America, you know, I don't think a OnePlus 8 is too expensive. I think the OnePlus 8 is exactly in the same tier that OnePlus has always been in. It's roughly 2/3 the price of a premium Galaxy or premium iPhone. That's always been the market they hit. They still continue to hit that. Component pricing from Qualcomm jumped. Carrier certifications and all of the licensing and all of the agreements, the pricing on that jumped. 5G is going to be another kick in the gonads for jumping up all of our prices. All of that tracks. All of that makes sense. Mr. Penriquez, I definitely want a Pixel 4a XL this year. I don't think we're going to get one. I think the Pixel 4a is only going to fight against the iPhone SE head to head. I don't think we're going to get an XL for the 4a this year. I've got another one here. Okay. From Zal Botnick, I wonder how the OnePlus phones are so cheap in India. Well, does India have two different implementations of 3G, carrier lock-in banding for LTE, and three different implementations of 5G? I don't think they do. I don't think India has a market where they're locked in on how carriers do business with consumers like we do here in the United States. And OnePlus's home turf in India probably affords them some perks where they don't get those kinds of special considerations in the North American market. And Jim72165, I just ordered the Red Magic 5G. So the Red Magic 5G has been the one phone I can point to that seems to undercut OnePlus pricing. So here's what I'm going to be curious about. It's a 5G phone. What carrier support? What band support? What LTE support? How is this going to operate in North American frequencies as an unlocked device when no carrier seems to be supporting or well supporting truly unlocked phones? I mean, like, if you want a OnePlus on Verizon and you want it to work on 5G, you have to get a special UW version, and that gets messy. So if we're fine with international phones only operating as LTE devices, then that's great. But for the Red Magic 5G, they're launching here in the United States. I don't know that they're shipping yet. I don't think they are shipping here in the United States. But they've been really quiet on what carriers and implementations and radio support they're going to support. They're actually going to include. So again, I want to see another Snapdragon 865 device with an activated 5G radio sold directly to North America in the United States with proper warranty and proper support chains. I want all that. But I also want to know who it works on. Like, will it work on T-Mobile's 5G? Sprint's 5G seems to already being affected by the T-Mobile Sprint merger. AT&T, Verizon, what's the support here? So we'll see. From Aditya Anil, I'm not sure about the 3G. The carrier lock-in is not big in India, and I'm sure 5G ain't coming to India till 2021 or 2022. So, I mean, maybe a OnePlus sold in India doesn't have the same Qualcomm licensing on the 5G radio. Maybe they can get away with, you know, kind of slow playing the rollout on that. I don't know. Let me get this out of the way here. And then let me cue that up there. So I got a message here from Matt Tyler. One, me and Sam are announcing a competition to the community. We are renaming the stream. Whoever picks the best name by next week will win some KZs. Anyone who's interested, we'll be launching today in the Discord. If you want to take part, drop us a message in the Discord. All right, good to know. We'll definitely chat about that. I think that's probably as good a place as any to start wrapping this up. Like I said, as soon as I am able to get my hands on one, I am very anxious to start checking out the TCL 10 Pro. I'm actually a little happy I don't have the 10L in my hands right now, because like I said, I am behind on finishing up my iPhone videos, my OnePlus videos, and I've got a huge LG V60 video, which should be out this week. It was supposed to be out last week and I couldn't finish it because it's huge. So be on the lookout, because there's going to be a lot of wrap up and longer term phone coverage, reviews and hands-ons and comparisons. And I still want to do a couple look back videos on a couple phones that might inform where we're going, like Sony with the Xperia 1 Mark II and Nokia with the Nokia 9. So there's going to be a lot. I have a lot on my plate right now, and some audio kit too. There's a microphone review that's going to be coming out tomorrow. Comica made a studio mic and it's pretty good. And I want you guys to hear why that's pretty nice and why it's pretty good. And then more podcasting. So I'm going to have a couple more episodes in the can for Creator Chat recorded this week. I'm going to be doing a lot of talking. So be on the lookout. This is going to be a really fun couple of weeks as we're going through all of this social distancing and remote work and stuff. But also, I also want you folks to stay safe out there, to look out for each other. I'm preaching to the choir, but again, like I've said in weeks past, you might not get all of the kudos you deserve. But in this current age of social distancing because of the situation, I'm sure your family and friends have probably been relying on you heavier than ever before. And we've all been relying on our technology and our gadgets and our gizmos and our computers heavier than ever before. So I'm going to just be the one to say directly to those of you watching and those of you listening, thank you for being a good tech neighbor. Thank you for being a good resource. Thank you for being a good tech citizen. And thank you for the effort that I'm sure is very rarely properly acknowledged when it comes to spreading better information, when it comes to citing sources or checking facts or making sure your family doesn't do something dangerous or foolish or leaving themselves exposed to more potential risk. Because of everything that's happening in the world today, good information is harder to come by than it should be. So I appreciate you, and I can't thank you enough for being a part of this community, for contributing to this community in any way that you can. If it's sharing, if it's monetarily, if it's commenting, if it's upvoting, if it's being on Reddit and trying to spread the word on good content, you're doing good work. And while you might not always get the direct vocal kudos, it is appreciated. It is noticed. And I always want to leave that off. So I really do have to go. I'm right at my time limit. So thank you so much for watching, for sharing, for participating, contributing. Stay safe out there. Keep your heads down. No unnecessary risks. I want to see all of these faces and all of these comments back next week. So wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Get a mask if you don't have a mask, or tie a t-shirt bandana around your face. I need you healthy because we have a lot of work to do. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. And I'll see you back here next week. Take care. I love y'all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.